So I'm a little bit. Today we're going to discuss anti-Semitism. The whole topic of this year is always anti-Semitism. But we're going to go into the root causes of anti-Semitism. And one of the things that I struggle with is that we take it for granted that anti-Semitism is an ongoing phenomenon. Fair enough to say?
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Now that we're here.
What?
Especially now that we're here.
So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is the anti-Semitism that we're now experiencing? Meaning, in the context, we're going to learn that there's two broad forms of anti-Semitism. If you had to divide anti-Semitism into two broad categories,
correct.
There you go. If you had to divide anti-Semitism into two broad categories, right? It basically boils down into the they hate us and want to kill us, or what?
And they should fast.
We want that.
Let's eat, right? They hate us and want to kill us. What's the other form?
They love us and want to convert us.
They love us and want to convert us. Correct. Those are the two general options. And if they can't convert us, then they want to kill us. Right. Okay. Those are your general anti-Semitism choices. This is impressive, Johnny. This is like me'al ume aver. Okay. So either they hate us and want to kill us, or they love us and want to convert us. Which one is it today? Like, one doesn't get the sense that if they love us and want to convert us, really. I mean, that's passé. Like, even the evangelists and the evangelicals who are supposed to love us and want to convert us, even they are now at least saying that they love us and, well, we want to convert you, but we'll accept you even in not converting you. On the other hand, like, it's also hard to say, do they hate us and want to kill us? Is that the one we're looking for? Is that which one it is today?
They love us and they want to marry us and assimilate us.
Is that an anti-Semitic act? That's not anti-Semitic. That's the antithesis of anti-Semitism. But we began by positing that anti-Semitism is alive and well.
Yeah, it wants to be innocuous.
So if... Wait a minute.
They just don't care about it. They just don't want to hear about
it. Then that's not anti-Semitism. Those aren't anti-Semitic people. People are indifferent to Jews. That's not anti-Semitism.
But they embrace Indian culture.
What?
They embrace Chinese culture, but they don't care about Jewish culture.
Well, that's another issue. What is Jewish culture? This is a separate issue. You understand what I'm saying? This is something I'm struggling with. We'll see inside today.
You don't believe there's anti-Semitism today?
Of course I do. Okay. I just don't know which one it is. I mean, what's that? The anti-Semitism that we think about is that I think they hate us and want to kill us. Right? I think that's...
Daily newspaper kind of thing.
That's the one we're talking about.
Let's not tell them openly.
But you can't say that. I guess it's like they hate us, want to kill us, but hide it in some way. I don't know. We'll see.
The Arab world is not so hidden.
It is hidden. Of course, it's hidden because they can't say we're anti-Semitic and hate the Jews.
Iran can say that.
What?
Iran can say that. Everyone wiped them off the map.
Well, but they didn't say that. He can't even say that. Even Iran, who's overtly anti-Semitic, what do they say? I don't hate the Jews. We're against the Zionist enterprise. Right? The way they persecute the Palestinian
because
people.
Because they're evil.
Correct.
Not because they're good and we just don't like
So we're going to see today, we're starting in the Pticha, which is, now we're going to get to the guts of the book. The Pticha is on page Mem Vav. And it gets into, we're going to have a few solid weeks of Jewish philosophy, theology, etc. Okay? And Rav Tachla is going to develop a broader, an extensive theme. And he's tying together the idea of what's called morasha. They came in shorts and a t-shirt. Yeah, I don't know, there's something in Congress. Okay. The idea of morasha, the language of morasha, as it appears both in context of Eretz Yisrael and in the context of the Torah. Okay, where do we see it in Torah? Torah tzivalan Moshe. Right. What's the next word? Morasha kihilat Yaakov. Right? And where do we see in the context of Eretz Yisrael? Kadosh Baruch Hu, in the beginning of Parashat Va'ira, tells Moshe, "Ve'oseiti v'itzalti v'lakachti v'natati ota lachem, v'natati ota lachem morasha ani Hashem." Right? Both that. So that word, the Rav Teichler will posit, is not by coincidence. Nothing is coincidental. So there's some inherent connection between Eretz Yisrael and the Torah. Both of them are called morasha. And over the next few weeks, actually, it's a long thesis that we'll tie it together over the next few weeks, we'll see what the connection between the two of them really is. So he begins, we're on page Mem Vav, 46 in the Hebrew, and I have no idea in English, on page forward. 60 in English. Torah ve'eretz Yisrael b'dibur echad ne'emru. Torah and the land of Israel were said in b'dibur echad, in one speech, one word. Okay, where do we see the idea, the notion of b'dibur echad? Anybody know?
Somewhere
with Zachor b'dibur echad. That was the Sarat Yitro. We're actually going to have a little mini parsha shir on Parsha Yitro from last week in this week's shir. V'heim train re'in de'lo mitparshin. They are two beloved, two lovers, two friends that cannot be divided. So it's interesting. It's very strong language. Like if you would ask, like in the hierarchical values of Judaism, where would you put like the Jewish people, Torah, and the land of Israel? So most Jews would say, well, first you got, I don't know, the Torah, then the Jewish people, and then the land of Israel is somewhere in there. It's like important, but it's certainly not way up there. He says, no, Torah and Eretz Yisrael are train re'in de lo mitparshin. Do we think of Eretz Yisrael as a core Jewish value, equal to that of the Torah? We haven't, but he says it is. Why? But Torah k'tiv, Torah tzibalanu Moshe, morasha. In the Torah it says, the God commanded says that the Torah is a morasha. The word morasha is a little bit tricky to translate, but we'll translate it as?
Inheritance.
Right, how would you say inheritance though? What's the word for inheritance?
Yerusha.
So what's the difference between Yerusha then and Morasha? What is Lahorish as opposed to Lareshet?
To conquer.
To bestow as opposed to
receive. Right, it's a bestowing. It's the inheritance to, I don't know, how do you say it? How do you lawyers say it? You're not a lawyer, right? I thought you were a lawyer. How do you lawyers say it? To inherit to somebody, to bequeath?
Your heritage.
It's not a heritage, it's inheritance. But if I am transmitting, I am inheriting it to my heirs. To bequeath. Yeah, okay. But Eretz Yisrael, even it says, "Natati uta lachem morasha." Okay, and I'm giving it to you as a morasha. Hare, we see, "Dinityachdu v'nitkavnu shnehem b'lashon echad morasha morasha l'gzeira shava." They're both inherently interconnected as a morasha, a gzeira shava. Right? They're connected in the words. L'horot di'inyanam shava etzleinu ve'inam nifradim. To teach us that they are equally connected, they're equally valuable to us, and they cannot be separated. So even that, in and of itself, is a theologically shocking statement. And if you'd ask which is more important, again, which is more important, Torah and Eretz Yisrael, of course the Torah. Any thinking Jew would say the Torah. Says, well, Teichel, you're wrong. They're both equally important. That Eretz Yisrael is a critical Jewish value. And we will have to spend a lot of time thinking about and discussing whether we think that's even true. Those of us who live here and moved here and value Eretz Yisrael, as valuable as the Torah? Is it on par?
Does it say in the Torah that it's
valuable? Yeah, and he's going to try to prove it to you.
We've got the whole thing of the mitzvot and not doing them. And doing the mitzvot and chotzar, it's just so we don't forget them.
Correct. That's
so
true.
It's not new concepts.
These are not new concepts, but to say it in that stark way, meaning if there's no Eretz Yisrael, you're saying, what if you took away the Torah? Would there be a Jewish people? What if you take away Eretz Yisrael, would there be a Jewish people?
No.
You're nodding yes. But Rav Tarsha seems to be saying.
But we've adapted the Torah in a certain way to suit our lifestyle in Chutzlar.
Yes.
Because we don't have an Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
So I'm sure.
But you still have the Jewish people. What he's saying.
The Jewish people existed pre-Torah.
No, they didn't. They're still a nation. It's a Jewish people.
That's interesting. I asked a riddle. Who was the first? I asked a riddle in my Shabbos table. Who was the first ger ever? And so my wife said Avraham Avinu, and I said no. I said I thought it was Yitro because Rashi says that Yitro came to be midgayer. She said no. What about all those people before? And I argue no, that there was no Jewish people until we received the Torah. We were not the Jewish people. We were an indigenous band.
It depends who you hold by.
A nomadic tribe.
Because isn't one opinion Yitro was there, you know?
Right, that's Machloka when he showed up. That's okay. But the Shabbat Gayer, Rashi says he came to be Bid Gayer. That's an accurate question of when did he come and when was the Parsha.
His family would have been
it's a big Machloka in the Parshanim, whether it came beforehand, whether it's Emugdalam Ulchar. We won't go into that now. So, but nonetheless, without the Torah, there's no Jewish people. What about without Eretz Yisrael? We would assume there would be. Now he's coming along and saying that there is not. And that the idea of Eretz Bnei Yisrael. Meaning, whatever you say, well, how would you say, well, what about the survival of all these 2,000 years without Eretz Yisrael? What would he say?
So we evolved our halachot in such a way that allowed us to remember Eretz Yisrael.
Nope, he would argue differently. He would argue and say that if Eretz Yisrael did not exist, we would cease to exist. meaning correct.
What does exist mean?
As a people. The Jewish people
as a place?
If Eretz...
The place was always here, but Am Yisrael was not in Eretz
Yisrael. If Am Yisrael was disconnected entirely from Eretz Yisrael, we would cease to be a people.
Well, we were.
We were never disconnected entirely.
We dive in that direction.
We dive in that direction. But even more than that, there was always someone, a Jew, living in Eretz Yisrael. Well, see, we'll actually see that. There's a halacha based on that. If you've ever seen a halacha of Kiddush HaChodesh. The Rambam even says that explicitly in the halacha of Kiddush HaChodesh. We'll get to it eventually. Okay. Tchila ava'er be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach inyan morasha ha'ne'emar be'inyan Torah. First, I will explain the idea of what's a morasha about the Torah. Mahu kavanato. Achar kach, then, ava'er be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach inyan morasha ha'ne'emar be'inyan Yisrael. Then I'll tell you what morasha is with regard to Israel. V'nir'ah be'alil ech she'elu shne'em mustagim shurim ba'agudim yachad ve'inam mitpadim. And then we'll see, once I know what a morasha is for the Torah, and then I know morasha is for Eretz Yisrael, then we'll see how their two are connected. Okay. Ishaya hanavi amar, said the prophet Isaiah, Kol kli yutzar alayich lo yitzlach, v'chol lashon takum itach l'mishpat tashii, zot nachalat avdi Hashem b'tzidkatam me'iti ne'um Hashem. So you have to translate the verse explicitly. I have it as follows. Tell me if I got it right. No weapon that is found against you, that is formed against you, shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against you in judgment, you shall condemn. Right? This is my inheritance, says the servant of God, and their righteousness from me, so saith the Lord.
He uses heritage.
What?
He uses heritage.
This is their heritage. Okay. So we have to understand, meaning really, he's going to try to understand, look in the Pasuk again, just to point it out. There's two, the Navi uses two different languages of attack against the Jewish people. First one is, Kol kli yutzar alayach lo yitzlach. Every kli, every vessel that is formed against you shall not succeed. That's one. And the second one is, V'chol lashom tekum itach l'mishpat tarshi. Right? Every language, every tongue that will rise up with you shall be judged in negatively, shall be, you shall condemn. Okay. V'adoneinu ha-Rambam zichro yagen oleinu. Our master, the Rambam, whose merit shall protect us, his memory, Rabbeinu ha-Eloki, ha-filosof ha-gadol, the great philosopher, bi-igrado ha-muforsemet enikret egeret teiman. He wrote a very, very famous letter called Igeret Teiman. Are you all, anybody not familiar with what's Igeret Teiman, the letter of Teiman?
I'm not.
The Yemenite letter. Apparently, the people in Yemen decided to persecute the Jews. Go figure. Okay, this is nothing new. The Jewish community was under terrible, terrible persecution. And they basically wrote a letter, the Rambam, a letter saying they're trying to convert us. They're trying to make us convert. And I'm not entirely up on my total Jewish history. Will you please tell us what to do? How do we deal with this terrible persecution? So the Rambam, there's a whole book, and if you look, if you have this set up, the Masada Rav Kook, there's a whole book of Igrot, of letters from the Rambam. And one of the Igrot, the Rambam's a whole long one, right? It's very, very long one, called, there's Igeret HaShvad, Igeret Chiyat HaMeitim, then there's one called Igeret Teiman, or, I never knew this actually, I wrote this today, Petach Tikva. It's called Petach Tikva. You know that? It's called that the Rambam's Igeret Teiman was also called Petach Tikva. I never knew that, okay? So the Rambam writes pages and pages, a long, long letter to the people of Teiman, basically giving them chizuk. And they write there basically, why is this happening to us, how is this happening to us, and what should we do? And more or less he says, you got to suck it up, you cannot convert. I mean, that's in a nutshell. I've never actually personally read the entire Igeret Teiman, but it is worthwhile when he quotes long sources, because we're going to see that he actually, Rav Tatzel quotes a good chunk of Igeret Teiman, which in retrospect makes a lot of sense. Because if you're in the middle of the Holocaust and you're looking for answers, why is this happening to us? So there's some kind of comfort in looking back historically, looking back 1,000 years before, and seeing that there's nothing new. You know what I'm saying? This is not shocking at all. So the Rambam is going to analyze this issue. So the Rambam wrote Igeret Teiman, Shekatav Livnei Ameinu Yoshvei Teiman. He wrote to our fellow co-religionists, those who lived in Yemen. When they were in very great distress, because the enemies were overtaking them, they were dealing with many, many difficulties and troubles. V'gazug zerot shmad aleihem latzeit min hadacha chas v'shalom. Right, and the Yemenite authorities made decrees of shmad, trying to get them to become apostates, to convert, God forbid. Shalach lahem Rabbeinu Moshe ish Elokim. The Rambam sent to them dvarim hanidabrim be'esh shalhevet yah. Sent them words in the fire of God, fiery, very fiery words. Lechazek emunatam, to strengthen their faith. Ulahamid raglam lebal timaed, right, and to strengthen their feet lest they stumble. Velisbol tzarot hashmad hatokfot aleihem is very, very powerful language. That they should suffer the trials, the tribulations, the pains of shmad that are attacking them, overcoming them. Very strong language. What does he say they should do? They should rejoice in that which they suffer. Avdat mamon, and they're going to lose all their money. Hagalut, to have said kol yanav, and their loss of everything. Shekol zel letiferet lanu leneged bereinu kavod gadol. This is all great glory before God. V'chol mashipol meitanu b'inyan zeh, everything that happens to us, hu chashun lefanav. Barach ke korban kalil al gabe mizbeach. And their suffering, their sacrifice is literally like a korban, like a sacrifice. So I never read the Holy Gerutim. I don't know if the Rambam says it, but you can imagine like what's Rav Chaichta, what's he writing? Meaning he's writing autobiographically, obviously. That you know, like we don't know why this is happening to us, and we're suffering terribly, terribly. But we have to find the solace in the knowledge that the sacrifices we're making, this our suffering, is like a korban before Hashem. I mean,
pretty
like
human korban.
Yeah.
It's not so nice.
What?
It's not so nice.
What do you mean, not so nice?
Well, we don't exactly sacrifice humans.
Like no. But we're not sacrificing humans. But you can say, well, how
that's
else?
What I'm saying. It's okay. Like we'll suffer, and that will be good because that shows.
No, I don't think I'm saying we'll suffer will be good. I think what he's saying really is we're suffering, and I have to deal with this suffering. I have to try to put it in some context. So, what's the only context I can possibly put it into?
Right.
Otherwise, you can go crazy. You know, how can you be a believing human being and see the Shoah going on around you and still believe in God? So he says, I'll look at the Igaret Teiman, and he gave us strength. He said, this is nothing new. This is, we have to rejoice in it. You have to be mislameach. It's hard for me to imagine, but he writes it.
He is saying straight up that people are being used as korban.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right, it's obvious. But we don't do the sacrifices. If a person gives his life to Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at that like a korban. He views it as a sacrifice. Oh,
here was a v'sham nifla'od. Yeah. Is he saying this as a simile, or is he saying this as a metaphor?
He's quoting the Rambam, but the Rambam said it. But it's obvious he's talking about himself. I think it's obvious to me. I mean, you know what I'm saying? He obviously takes some chizuk in the Igaret Teiman for himself. He said many great things to strengthen their weak hands, to give strength to buckled knees. He writes very poetically. Okay, the Rambam also he brings this pasuk and he explains it. Okay, because it's a very long, very long letter. Okay, I'm going to copy the content that's relevant to us. So he's going to sort of paraphrase and quote and paraphrase and quote. So I mean, I was going to read you some of it, but in the end, he gets the Rambam. He quotes the Rambam basically in general anyway. So there's no reason to read it in the Igaret Teiman, because the Rav Teichla is going to quote the parts that are relevant to us. He says the following: Du, no, Shazot Hatarashi biyadenu hi Torat Hashem haAmitit shenitna lanu al yedei Adon kol hanavim. So the first thing you have to know is our Torah is the truth. Because if you have to start from the basic foundation, the Torah is the truth. Because if you don't have that, if you don't believe that the Torah you have is absolute truth, what are you suffering for? What's the point? And that's the core foundation of Jewish life. And to be honest with you all, we never talk about this. We never talk about the truth of the Torah, faith in a Ribbono Shel Olam, belief in the truthfulness of the Torah. It's almost, I think, like a topic we kind of skirt in a sense. It's like passé in a sense. You know, to say that wait, do you believe every single word of the Torah is true, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael? Like, you know,
isn't it scary? If you really openly admit that it's true, then you really should be doing everything.
Well, I hope it's. I mean,
if you don't think it's true, then what
are you doing anything?
No, I don't think people's silence means that they don't believe it's true. But if they admit openly that it's true, they've got no more excuses.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I think in the day and age,
because 99% sure it's fine.
Oh, you think that?
I didn't lose, and I didn't. You know, it's that. But
I think in today's day and age, people who say that they believe they believe in revelation as such, we kind of skirt around these topics. Do you believe that there was a revelation to God at Sinai, that God spoke to the Jewish people at the mountain on Sinai? You ask. Most Jews, do they believe that? Most Jews would tell you, no, not religious Jews. Not religious Jews. Most Jews, even, I would say, even observant Jews, but not religious, they would say,
what's that?
What's observant but not religious? I don't know. Good question.
It's not.
I don't know. Most Jews would tell you, I don't know. Or, no. Vast majority.
We live in a world, an evidence-based world, and we don't see these miracles today. It's not
so I'm asking
Jews,
you,
it's everyone.
What about Orthodox? I wonder if we did that, if we did a survey among the Orthodox, do you believe?
No one would answer incorrectly.
No, people, I think, I'm curious what percentage of people would not be able to answer that they believe that this revelation happened. Because it's really, I mean, how shall I say this? That belief is transmitted and is ridiculed in our culture in countless ways. It's derided as primitive and archaic and out of touch with reality. In so many ways, in so many subtle ways, as to be unnecessary to even say.
At the minute you take that away, there's nothing left.
Right.
So you can't go there.
What do you mean I can't go there? I just went there.
Okay, and your maskana has to be that there was a revelation.
What do you mean it has to be?
Because if your maskana is that suffix or that didn't happen or whatever, then you just start, your whole deck of cards starts crumbling.
I don't think people think about it that deeply.
Well, that's
I think they choose not to think about it that deeply. I mean, if you're sensitive, if you read, just read, what I'm saying is like read magazines, read newspapers, read articles, if you're into technology, just the idea of, like, read articles by not religious Orthodox rabbis, but by, like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know if you have this. Do you have conservative movement where you're from? Like, there was a whole hollow. I remember, like, a few years ago, 5 years ago, a very, very well-known conservative rabbi from the largest synagogue, I think, in Los Angeles, got up on his shul on Shabbat morning and said,
"There was no revelation.
There was no revelation." Or I am not. I don't believe that there was a revelation. I don't believe it actually happened. So then, why do you do all the things that you do? Right. So obviously, we Orthodox had a party with this, you know, and gave dress out about here
until
tomorrow.
Until he retracted.
What?
Until he retracted.
He retracted, and now he does believe in a revelation.
Apparently, he does.
Some form, yeah. Not as described.
He had a revelation.
He had a revelation.
I think the revelation was that the Jewish Federation was going to pull his funding.
No, Federation would never pull his funding for that. His synagogue might be mad. Maybe, you understand what I'm saying? Meaning, you're talking about a person who represents Judaism to the best. Like, okay, we Orthodox are like off the reservation for most people. Understand that. Right? Most people, the 90% who's not Orthodox, look at us Orthodox and say, okay, you Orthodox. You got a bug in your head and we respect you for that and it's all great, but normal people don't think like you. You know what I'm saying? Let's all be good Jews, normal Jews. We're Jewish. We love being Jewish. We love observance. But, okay. So then you ask those 90%, do they believe in Torah Sinai? And the answer is, not really. Either that or I don't even think about it.
Those that are Orthodox and choose to Shomer Torah and Mitzvot, you have to... Somewhere along the line, the whole deck's going to crumble.
That's, if you have those records.
You don't follow the blogs. If you follow the blogs, you know there's this whole movement now that they call, well, one blogger calls orthoprax. What's orthoprax? Orthoprax is people who keep orthodoxy out of either habit or a desire to associate or a desire to be connected to a community that feels warm and intimate and wonderful.
Are you?
What?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Many.
For sure.
Of course.
But first of all,
I would say, but they're not, but they don't, if you'd ask them, do they believe in the tenets and principles of orthodoxy, as it were, the answer would be clearly, not all of it. No way.
How do they think that 100 generations of Jews ended up here today without believing it? I mean, you can't, yes, it's a proof-driven society, so and you don't see the proof of it.
Does that mean that Muhammad really went up to the mountain? Seriously, I mean, there's a lot more of them than there are of
right.
us, and they believe.
We'll have deal. You know, this will be on the internet. I always struggle with Christianity, and I don't see. I don't understand it. Like, you know what I'm saying? But then somebody would look at us and say,
"And revelation?
Really? Where's the proof? Where's the whatever?" Okay, so now we have to get into it. How do we know that it's true? So many, many Rishonim go in this very specific direction. The Rambam goes in this direction also. Let's go back to Rav Teichfeld's text. The Amitat Torateinu, the truth of our Torah, ain't over noy lo al mofet velo al ot. It's not built on mofet, on a wonder and a sign. Rak al ra'aya ushtmu'a mamashit. Rather, proof, actual testimony. Shebe'einenu ra'inu et hofa'at malkeinu bareinu al har Sinai. We, with our own eyes, saw the appearance of our King, our Creator, on Mount Sinai. U'ba'azneinu shamanu mimenu. And with our ears, we heard, Ech shediberi Moshe ve'amar, anochi Hashem lokecha, mechol hadvarim kulam. We heard, we saw. This is a core, and this is a very famous argument. The Kuzari really presents this argument in a very strong way. The Khazar king is asking, how do you know your religion is more true than the other religions? So he says exactly this argument. Umigram ale diber hakatuv. Right, the Pasuk says explicitly, where is this from? This is from this week's parasha. Hine anochi ba'alecha be'av he'anan. I will come to you in the thickness of the cloud. Ba'avor yishma ha'am bedabri imach. So that the nation will hear when I speak to you. And they will believe you forever. It's not just that we believe that Moshe saw God. We saw God. And we also heard it. And that we have complete proof, complete faith. That's what it says. And they will believe, God says to Moshe, and now you know they will believe in you forever, because they see it. We're like two witnesses who testify they saw something, anything. That if I say something, and I testify something, and I see you testify the same thing, then I know that what you say is true. V'cheinu dabar banu. That same thing is true of us, the Jewish people. Yadanu amitat Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that what Moshe has said is true. V'shira'ainu b'ma'amar har Sinai b'shat ha'dibor. We saw in har Sinai. Lo mipnei mofet. Not because of some sign or sing or symbol. Why? Shalom mofet. Yishistapek she'emor ne'amet. Maybe it's just CGI. Maybe it's special effects. It's some kind of magic trick. Aval al-ri'yah en yistapek. But some kind of but vision, but true witnessing testimony is no safek. V'zehu gadlo shel ha'ma'amad ha'u. This is the greatness of that event of Har Sinai. V'ru'u lachem achenu. Okay, and our brothers look at this. See, this is a quote from the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Shadavar gadol hazeh hu kamo she'amarti." Okay, this is what I told you. Ki lo ita zulatenu. It's not just us. That the entire nation saw God speak. We see God's glory eye to eye. And why did God do this? In order to instill faith in us. So that nothing will cause us to stumble in our faith. And so God did this so that we shouldn't stumble. When the attacker, the anas, the overpowering person, will try to overcome us. V'gzolin gzirot shemad v'tzarot, and he'll decree on us shemad, persecution and affliction. Or if they try to convince us, we say to them, look, if you can do if you can give us a Har Sinai, another Ma'amar Har Sinai, tell you what, you want us to convert? Great, do us a favor. Give us a revelation like Har Sinai, and then we'll believe you. But until then, do us a favor, go fly a kite. Right, and he says, what, this is the explanation. Ki ba'avur nasot etchem ba'alokim. The word nasot here means lenasot, to raise you up. The word nes means, what's a nes in the Torah? Right, nes is a pole. It's a flag. To raise you up like a flag.
That's to enjoy lenasot.
Ma?
Lenasot is to enjoy.
Lenasot? No, you mean to experience. From nisayon. That's another conjugation. But here, lenasot, Rashi says explicitly, Bavur l'nasot, God did to lift you up. Ubavur tiyeh yiratov v'neichem levoti tachatam, so that his fear will be upon you, so that you will not sin. Klomar, Rambam continues, shezeh shenigla lechem b'inyan zeh, haya kadeh shetamdu b'chol nisayon shivka lechem b'chayayit hayamim. This is so that you'll be able to withstand every test in the end of days. Okay, I just want to see where I am. Shelo yazud l'bavchem v'lo tachatam, so that you should not sin. Okay, he goes on, I'm going to explain. Ube'emet, in truth, to explain this idea, Katav Rabbeinu Hasmag. Hasmag, who is a smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gedolot. Who wrote the smag? I don't remember. Smag, I think we're Moshe Mikutzi, maybe. I don't know. He lived in the Mitzvot Gedolot, 1200s, 1100s, something like that. And he brought in the Shema. V'chei v'hakdamah l'beinu ba'al Sefer HaChinuch. Okay? V'hosif. He adds on. And this is a very expansion of the idea of why is Har Sinai such a good proof? Thanks. Unless you didn't help me know. Okay, thank you. Okay. Nobody wears a watch anymore, you notice. What? Can you turn it?
Should be
it.
Anyway, don't worry about it.
He's never a stand. Okay. V'osif, od l'vair mitat ha'olam hazeh, v'ked ha'marata, it's agreed, if two people say something equally, shukain kain or lo kain, it's true or not true. I mean, how do you know if something is true or not? You take the guy into a room and you say, tell me what happened. You take another guy into another and you say, tell me what happened. Right? And if their stories really line up and they believe what's happening, then you know that it's true. Okay? If two witnesses testify that one guy killed another, and misha idu alav. So then, that's how you execute somebody. And if you're not sure, then you wouldn't kill somebody, you wouldn't execute somebody if you weren't sure. Meaning, how do you know something is true? By driving their testimony together, that's how you know if it's true or not. Okay, good. Masvarahi, and the reason is, the idea is, the logic behind it is, since people have different perspectives, you know, it's not so true. You ever sit in a room and you hear, like, you're at a meeting. And so you go after the meeting and, like, you took notes and some other guy took notes. And you say, well, what did I say? And it's so interesting to me how people hear totally different things. You used to have that with speeches. What did the rabbi talk about? And one guy heard the rabbi talked about something, and another guy heard the rabbi talked about something else, and I thought I talked about a third thing entirely, that it wasn't anything I talked about. But, like, people are listening for different things. So he says, if two people say the same thing, then it must be true. Okay. Let's get the parentheses. Umidikivnu lahagid ke'achat, and since they're both in the same place, I'm on mem chet. Fifth line on mem chet. Muchach shulamet. It must be true. It's absolutely true. Zeu b'shnei b'nei adam. That's if, for two people. He says, but what happens? V'kol she'im shlosha, o arba'a, O Asara, O Mea, O Elif. What if 1,000 people come and say, you'll never believe what we saw at the U2 concert. The guy just imploded. I don't know, whatever.
Special effects.
What? Then it's special effects. Yeah. Can't believe it. Okay. See, you can't, nowadays, you can't even believe the things that everybody sees. You can't believe anything anymore.
Well, they had witchcraft back then as well.
Snakes and stuff. Stars into snakes and crocodiles.
Yes, they did. They did have witchcraft. Okay, so meaning it had to be such a powerful experience that everybody thought it was true. That's exactly the point.
Experience, not...
They heard, they saw God. They knew God.
They knew it.
To such a degree, the Midrash says, that their souls left them. Such a degree that they themselves asked Moshe to stop. It was too much for them. And if they weren't sure if it was true, they would have said, nice show, can you do it again? You know?
We're here, are we?
Yeah, great.
So that's the point. It's not that the whole of Am Yisrael sought.
No.
It's that the whole of Am Yisrael...
It's not that they saw it. It's that they all said they saw the same thing. They said they saw it. Okay? As barur kizor harakia, but the shemit safek cloud, so clear, without any shadow of a doubt, the hadavar emet masha amru. It must be true. Why? The idu haya sheker, v'rak sheni dabu b'neim l'makach v'kach, lo yimaleit shechanu hem lo yichazev hadavar. Let's all agree today, here, okay? And we're all going to decide, we can turn off the tape, and we're all going to decide that Johnny brought out a chocolate cake, shein kamoha, right? And before our eyes, the chocolate cake turned into vanilla cake. Just make it up.
That's how the black and white was formed.
That's how the black and white was formed.
Right. Actually, sorry, it was a vanilla cake, and as you know,
but I'm doing, my miracle is the other way around. Okay? We all agree among us that this is the story that we're going to tell. Right? It's the miracle of the chocolate cake. You'll never believe what we all saw. What are the odds that this story will last a week? We all agree. We all promise. We swear up and down, right? That we're gonna, you know.
You got a videotape.
What?
Video.
You could do anything you want. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Even if I show you in video. Nowadays, by the way, yeah, it's so interesting. We live in an age. So interesting that you said that. We live in an age that we don't even believe the things that we see because we all know that it's not true. Right? You can make anything up you want. So if you don't even believe the things you see, how are we supposed to believe anything? This is really, I think, the core of the trouble of the day and the age in which we live. Right? There are no absolute truths. What are the only things that people actually believe in? What's the one thing that people think you really can and should believe in?
Money.
No, they don't believe in money. They worship money. But they don't believe in money. What do people believe in?
Themselves.
Science. They believe in science. People will tell you, science is the only absolute truth.
I think that's changing too.
Think so?
Yeah.
All the atheists believe in science. Famous books about the
democracy.
What?
Democracy.
They don't believe in democracy. They don't worship
science. They don't believe in science.
You're talking about core beliefs. You're talking about core beliefs. And it's science. I believe in science. Science is absolute truth. You don't think that that's the... And that's the basis of their theological faith.
No, it's different.
Well, that's the way that's a different here.
What?
Yeah, I think even the atheists today will agree that science answers the question of how, but not the question of why.
So then how can you be an atheist then? If you have no way of knowing, how can you be an atheist? How could you come to a conclusion of denying if you... If
it's
nothing,
become an atheist. Well, you don't have any proof to say.
That's an agnostic. That's not an atheist. An atheist knows there is no God. An agnostic doesn't know. So what do you base your atheism on? Well, you have to have a core belief. How do you know there's no God? Because you have to know that these things just happen.
It's more far-fetched than the alternative.
Really?
For them.
What do they believe in? So then what do they believe in? What's the alternative?
They believe that and there was stuff here and it just...
How do they know that? How do they know that?
They don't. They believe
in... No. Yes,
science,
they do.
Science.
That's exactly my point.
But what I'm saying to you is...
Today we believe...
These
scientists... But why do we believe in science?
...reject each other so often.
100%. I don't believe in science. There's a whole debate now. I don't believe in science. There's a whole debate now about brain...
Never go to the doctor.
What?
Never go to the doctor.
Chas v'shalom, of course, I think science has a benefit to it. Science, there's a knowledge to it. But do I believe in it to create a theology? No. It's the knowledge that we have to this point. There's nothing absolute about science. I can tell you to any degree, you know, in the future.
Also, it only asks the question of how. It never gives you
correct.
The
reading that antibiotics are good for us, not bad for us.
Well, I mean, I know, of course I go to the doctor.
Okay. There's a difference between, you know, worshipping the idea of fact of science and then believing it to be true.
I didn't say I don't believe science. There is truth in science. I said I don't believe in science.
There's
is that okay?
Yeah.
Can I
that's better formulation.
Okay.
No, what I'm saying is people really, they take science as their core belief, and they build a theology based on that. And I think, by the way, most people in some way, like, I really believe in the power that culture affects us. This is a very, very true and subtle message. I'll get back to brain death in a second. Like, people talk about what they call the singularity. What's the singularity? Never heard about this? Like, if you're into, like, computer stuff. Singularity is... Come on, high-tech guys. No?
Something of the point where computer... the intelligence of a computer will kind of reach that of human intelligence and be able to kind of overtake human...
Correct. Itself. It becomes self-aware. Singularity is when...
Jeopardy.
What?
IBM just...
They won?
Yes, by brute force, but not by intelligence or self-awareness. Singularity is self-awareness. Okay. Very good. These people believe to the core that there's going to come a point. Why? What does that mean? That means that at some point we can overcome. There's no God. It's just somebody figuring out how to create a computer that's smarter than the human brain. That somehow developed on its own. You know what I'm saying? That's why this is a huge debate in Orthodoxy about this idea of issue of brain death. When is brain death? And science has determined criteria for brain stem death. And I'm like, the whole thing makes me so uncomfortable because as exact as science is, no scientist can tell you when does the neshama enter the goof and when does the neshama leave the goof. There's no way to know.
But they're not telling you.
Yeah, of course they are. That's exactly what they're telling you. They're telling you when is death. How do we define death? We don't define death in terms of biology.
It's not for the Rebbeim to decide at that point. I think
of course it is.
I don't think so. I think that it's up to the for the Rebbeim to decide.
Is murder a theological or a biological question?
It's for the Rebbeim to decide when the death of somebody is considered brain death. That's as much as a Rebbeim can do. And then it's up to the doctor to decide when brain death is determined, I would think.
No, it's up to a rabbi to decide, is brain death considered death or not, right?
If they do, or not, then the scientists will then determine what brain death is.
100%, agreed. But the scientists have determined what they think is brain death. Mm-hmm. And based on that, then they want to say, since a person is brain dead, but his heart is still beating, we can cut out his heart and give it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Okay, which is an unbelievable thing that they can do. Only one problem. What if he's not dead? So they have meaning. And I must say, I don't enter into this fray, but I don't understand the hubris of someone to say that I can tell you for certain that I know the soul is no longer there.
They're not saying that.
Of course they are.
No, you're saying that the soul isn't there. The doctor's saying...
The doctor doesn't care about the soul.
Yeah, the doctor... No. The doctor's...
I'm talking about in this theological debate, the rabbi has to chime in. Right? Religion has to say something, has to have a say. Religion determines when death is, not science.
But you already have.
When?
You've determined that if the Rebbeim determined that brain death...
Rebbeim haven't. This is the debate. Mm-hmm. The debate is it brainstem death or is it cessation of circulation, of heartbeat, of whatever? That's how this is a huge debate. And all I'm saying is that science is kovea. Science said that if there's brainstem death, then a person is dead. And I'm saying that's true scientifically, but I don't believe in science, if you understand what I'm saying. Because what's true today can clearly change tomorrow, because it should change tomorrow. It goes on the best information we have to date. That's not a theological truth.
The world's flat.
What? Right, 100%. And it was, because that was the best information they had to date. What are we going to say about all these people if somehow somebody in 100 years comes along and says, we can revive a brain dead person? What does that mean? That means Lemafreya, they literally, in order to save people, they killed literally thousands and thousands of people. It scares me.
Because there wasn't a chance of saving
them. Doesn't matter. They were alive still.
They weren't alive by those standards back then. It doesn't make a difference.
Of course it makes a difference, because if we had the ability...
But you didn't.
What you're saying is that according to this, the definition of being dead was not accurate.
Correct.
In these days.
The scientific definition.
What Ari and Kevin, I think, are saying is that it was worth saving the lives because there was nothing more we could do.
At the time.
One second. So you're on a very slippery slope. You acknowledge that the person is alive, but it's worth saving a life because we couldn't save the person anyway. What if the person has dementia? We call this a slippery slope for a reason. Right.
Working in the neurological field with a device that I use to monitor other people's brains, I would actually say that in certain cases, it's probably better that even if they have dementia, it's probably better to save another one.
So you are perfect, beautiful proof for the anti-brain death people. What?
It's pronosifer.
This is the world in which we live, in which we determine. I believe in science, we determine knowledge of humankind. And I think it's really, maybe I'm speaking about this too much. I'm sorry if I'm like talking to you guys too much, but it's really where I feel sometimes I'm like totally under attack. And I'm a theologically relatively confident person.
This is the question that though, the whole question.
Don't you feel like that way? That like society is saying to you in so many ways, you're a moron for your system of beliefs. And if you want to believe that, you Orthodox.
But that's only if you try and argue it.
Meaning you just rather ignore the argument.
Or not go there.
That's what most people do. But they don't go there the other way.
There is no way you are going to convince a Chiloni that what you do makes sense. And believe me, I've been...
But he said Ramat Har Sinai.
So you got your grandma. Your grandma is not doing very well. You want to put a feeding tube into her. The secular doctor tells you there's no reason to. She's dead. And you don't want to listen to him. But he's not going to do it. He's not going to feed him. He says it's against his principles to put a feeding tube into this kind of person.
Well said.
It's still up to you to decide.
Well, but we're just talking about... This is the Rambam. You're telling me, it's so interesting, the Rambam said, I've got perfect proof. Proof positive. Nothing you can argue with about it. 100%. I don't have the testimony of two people. I've got the testimony of half a million people plus. And you're telling me, there's nothing you can say that will convince this guy.
That's right.
All right, let me phrase the question in a different thing.
Do you understand today, the problem here?
Why can't you say today, that all the Jewish people saw at Mount Har Sinai was a volcanic eruption?
Because that's not what it says. That's not what they said. They didn't see a volcanic eruption.
My point in saying is that it doesn't make a difference whether or not they saw a volcanic eruption, because they might very well have seen a volcanic eruption, but according to the people who were there, the theological truth that all of them had together was that they had a revelation of Hashem, and it didn't make a difference what happened.
No, I totally disagree with that. I totally disagree with that. Because if what happened wasn't what they saw, somebody would have said, we didn't see God, we saw a volcano.
How did they know what a volcano was back then?
Meaning, what?
They had volcanoes back then.
But God spoke to them. What do you mean, they don't know somebody speaking to you? They don't hear the words?
They do. They hear thunder from an eruption.
No. Words. Anochi, Hashem, Elokecha, Asher
v'Tzitzi. I don't know. We've heard stories.
Of course it makes a difference. Wow. I mean, it's shocking. You're arguing against Revelation. You're arguing against the Rambam and the Kuzari and the Smaug and the Chinuch. I don't see it.
We've heard stories, and we choose to believe that. And we believe it without any shemitz, doubt, or suffix or anything. That's the truth. But the guys I work for, Le Machal, mm-hmm. or with, whatever, there is no ways you can say anything that will convince them that there was Ma'amar HaShadai. They think you are freaked out of your mind to believe in some primitive religion. And you're not going to convince them.
So they think that all of us just lost our mind.
Yes, for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. I'm saying. I agree with you. I think most people think that we lost
and the Rambam are all saying that when you compare it to other religions, everyone else comes along and says, one person had a revelation. Whether it was
Muhammad, right. Everybody walked on water, but he said he walked on water.
A prophecy or a revelation that came along, but we have 600,000 men. And everybody else who was standing there actually heard God talk.
Right. He's going to finish it.
Why do we have to assume? Because we don't know any of those 600,000 people.
You're related to many of them.
But no, we think we're related. We're told we're related. But we don't know one person who was actually standing
there.
We're even told that in
here's my question. When did the lie start? How would you start such a lie?
Maybe Yitro went back to his
and he came back and
guess what happened? I went down there and guess what?
And nobody would come along and say, "Whoa!"
Well, they weren't there. How many people traveled?
But how would the story have gotten out that
Yitro passed it on? He was, Midian.
Did he pass down that they saw it? That they all saw it?
This was, he came home to convert. He came home to tell people.
So what would he have told them?
He told them that everybody there, you heard about Egypt, so these people saw us.
So wouldn't our story be that we heard from Yitro that everybody there? Or if someone in that would get lost? We would say, we would translate that into we were there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't somebody say, no, but that's not the real story. We got it from Yitro.
You know, history gets
you understand what I mean? But it does it. Muhammad's, one second. Muhammad's history never got diverted. We know what he said. Jesus' history, we know what he said, we know what they said he said, which isn't what he said.
Of course,
that's very new.
What?
That's very new.
It was never very new. I mean, everybody, we always knew what he said and what he didn't say. You know what I'm saying? So it was never a question. There's no question of what actually happened. It's all a question of, do you believe that this person is a representative of God or not?
That's a question.
Let me finish the paragraph, and we'll stop with this, and we'll continue next week. Va'ata, and he says, Hador she'amdu b'ma'amar ha'sinai, this generation, shev shishim ribo anashim do'odim levar anashim, 600,000 people, masu l'dor she'ni, they gave it, as what you said, Johnny, they gave it to the second generation. Masu l'dor ha'chadash, kulam b'safa achad, u'bura n'chuna n'mitat ha'davar. They all translate the same message, the same story. Shubarur k'shema, shubarur l'anu mitziyoto ba'olam, it's obvious, it's true as the sun. That we just approved.
So rabbis tell us.
What?
So rabbis tell us.
No, your parents told you.
Yeah, but that's
not. At some point, you have to tell me that some generation of parents all decided together to lie to the children.
No, that's not how lies work. Because we believe that.
Find me a mass hysterical lie that you think that everybody thinks is true. Well, you wouldn't know it's a lie then, I guess. I don't know if you could do that. But that everyone thinks is true that was spread by one person. Yeah, right.
You can't.
How many people believe that? True. How many people? That's not your the proof. Is exactly. Excuse me. Your proof is perfect. It's terrific. Because there are a group of people that follow Rabbi Nachman. That's wonderful. There's a huge number of people that don't.
Okay, this
and
is
never
a
will.
Number of people that don't follow Kadosh Baruch Hu. Billions. If it was subjected to you, then they all follow Kadosh Baruch Hu.
So you're saying that we shouldn't believe that he...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that...
It's not such a good proof. It doesn't do anything to you.
No, I'm saying there's no point in arguing about it. That's not the proof. No, that's a conversation.
Let's come back to Emma Bunim's next one. We'll wrap up with this. You're in the middle of the Holocaust. Okay? Why is this happening to me?
Did they listen to him?
What?
Did they listen to him?
Who?
About
this? About believing
about
in God? Of course they believe
about
in God.
About anything?
Of course they believe in God. Of course they believe in God.
Did they
so you're trying to say, why is this...
Written a whole book. We from everywhere.
We're just at the beginning of the book. Okay. Oh, you didn't read my blog. I have to tell you the story.
Okay, so
I have to
read
it and tell you
the
story.
But when we get to the end of the book, you're going to tell me why they didn't listen to him. Because we've got 600,000 men who were there.
No, but that's Torah. That's not Eretz Yisrael. Please. Let's not assume everybody agrees that Torah and Israel are the same. Let's not. So I got it. Y'all don't read my... What?
We didn't get to the next paragraph.
We didn't get this paragraph.
It's the same argument. The same way as you can't convince them that Eretz Yisrael is fundamental.
So then you can't believe...
You can't convince them, a lot of Chilonim and people who aren't Jewish that this happened.
I wonder. I often wonder if you did a blind survey. How many people at your work?
What, 7 to 5, whatever.
5. Blind survey. Do you believe that God gave Moshe the Torah to the Jewish people in Sinai? Yes or no?
No.
Okay. You sure?
You haven't met these guys.
I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Probably right. But anyway, I got this story. So wait, you asked me how many people leave. I have to finish the story. I wrote it on my blog. Get a telephone call this week from a guy at Rabbi Swalter. Yeah. Do you have a minute to talk? Sure. Do you, I heard that you give a shiur in Emma Banim Smecha, Rabbi Teichtel.
Is it a call or an email?
Phone call. So I said, yeah. He said, can you tell? I'm so-and-so. I don't think he's his grandson. I'm Rabbi Teichtel's grandson. He called me in America. Wow. Very nice. I said, yeah, how can I help you? Knowing exactly what's coming. He goes, well, we have a kollel that's named in Rav Teichtel's memory. He says, I know you came from a kehila in America, because he had called me in America. And he says, and we'd like to know, do you have any members of the shul that you could, you know, forward us their information? So I said to him, I said, listen, I'll tell you exactly, I remember this conversation we had 5 years ago. I'll tell you exactly the same thing I asked you then. Tell me, in the kollel, which is named after Rav Teichtel, do you learn his book? And he goes, well, we don't not learn his book intentionally. He said, if like an issue of halacha came up where he related to it in the book, we would probably learn it. But I said, have you read his book? He said, I've read enough of it. I said, well, not really. Because if you read his book, you would know this. He didn't write his book for me. He wrote his book for you, right? And we'll see this much, much, much later on. And to be brutally honest, right? the idea that you would have a colon of memory is very wonderful, but he wanted you to have a certain set of values, from what I understand. So, I'm really sorry, but until what you can tell me, we agreed to disagree. At some point, I had to hang up the phone. Nice guy, really nice guy, but we had to agree to disagree. And so if you're listening here and you live in Detroit and some guy calls you from Arteta's Colo, like, they didn't get it for me.